Okay. Alrighty, these are vorts in the Haggadah. There's a long list of them, but likely we will not get through all that many. Okay. Before we start with vorts in the Haggadah, perhaps just an idea on the month of Nisan, in which Pesach is. It says in the Torah, "V'havadata et avodah hazot," you should do the service in reference to the Korban Pesach, "b'chodesh hazeh," on this month, in reference to the month of Nisan. In the Chassidus Sfarim, they point out that the word zos appears in another place in Chumash as well. The word zos also appears in Avodas Yom HaKippurim, when Aaron HaKohen went into Kodesh HaKadoshim, into the Holy of Holies. So it's kind of like when you're composing a letter to your girlfriend, you weigh every word, like you ask yourself, should I sign it love? Should I sign it yours truly? Should I sign it forever yours? You figure she's going to read it very carefully. And you would do the same if you got a letter from your girlfriend, so you're like, wait, how come she only signed sincerely? Where's the love, or why did she say yours truly, or love, why not love always, maybe, right? You're always saying, you're reading it very carefully, and that's the way you should read the Torah. And when the Torah uses the word zos in Chodesh Nisan, you should ask yourself, how come it said avoda hazot? Why didn't it just say v'avadat avoda b'chodesh hazeh? And this one, why does it need to say avoda zos? What's the word zos? Well, it also says zos by Kodesh HaKadoshim, when Aaron goes into Kodesh HaKadoshim. And the lesson learned, say the Sfarim HaKadoshim, is that the month of Nisan, b'chodesh hazeh, you also have zot. And this month of Nisan, you also have the ability, you should view this month as a Kodesh HaKadoshim. This month is Holy of Holies, which at first glance is somewhat curious. Really? This month, the month where I'm actually out of the Beis Medrash, where it's been as manim, the month where I'm spending my time doing such mundane things as shopping and cleaning and who knows what else, and this is the month that's supposed to be Kodesh HaKadoshim? And the answer is yes. That Kedusha is not just, and we'll touch upon it a little bit later, is not just in the Beis Medrash, it's not just in the Beis HaKnesses where we are right now, but it's also when I am in the supermarket, it is also when I'm in my home cleaning, it is also when I'm out of yeshiva and just hanging out with my friends. That too, potentially, can be Kodesh HaKadoshim. Okay. The simanim. Before we start the Seder, so most families have a custom to sing different tunes for different families. Kadesh Uchatz, Karpas Yachatz. Right. So most families do that. Right. So there's different tunes here. There's also the Kadesh Uchatz, Karpas Yachatz. Different families, different families. What's the significance of that? Why don't we start with the simanim before we actually do the Seder? Why don't we just jump right into it and start with the Kiddush? Why do we have to give a heads up, Kadesh Uchatz, Karpas Yachatz? Why do we need a heads up? Just jump right into it. So in the Minchas Asher Haggadah, Rav Asher Weiss says that the notion behind the simanim, don't just jump into it, but first it's the notion of preparation. When you prepare for something, when you anticipate something, it is a lot different than if you just go into it blindly. It's not as impactful, it's not as good, and it's not as long-term lasting. All right, a simple example, I am sure I am willing to bet the farm. I don't own one, but if I owned a farm, I'd be willing to bet one. I am willing to bet the farm that it could very well be that everyone had a great time yesterday, all right, and a meaningful and significant time yesterday in the Shomron. But I am willing to bet the farm that anyone that took the time to also read the booklets before that Rav Mordechai prepared, right, during that 15 Musar slot and during the afternoon Tanakh classes, if you took the time to learn those stories about Shechem, to learn those stories about Har Gerizim and Har Eival, to learn the stories of what happened around the Lone Moreh, and to learn the stories of Shiloh, and all of the Pilegish Begiva story, if you took the time to read all of those stories, Chalukah Aretz, I am sure that the trip was 10 times more meaningful yesterday. It's natural that when you prepare for something, it's just that much more meaningful. And that's what we're trying to do at the beginning of a Seder. Give you a heads up of what's about to come. Right, now, it happens to be that that's like cramming. That's like last minute. Oh, no, this come. But if we know that the more we prepare, the more impactful it will be, we should take it into account when we prepare. We have 20 days or so till Pesach, a little bit more. Let's take it seriously. Let's prepare so that the experience that we have is going to be all that more meaningful. I told a story once. I'll tell you. There was once a mashal, Alpi mashal. There was a very poor person who used to collect money outside of some office building. And in this office building was a very, very wealthy individual who worked. And every day they would cross paths. And one time they bumped into each other. And after they bumped into each other, the poor person was just staring at the rich person. And the rich person says to him, "What are you staring at?" And he says, "You know, I got to tell you, every day I come by here and I wonder, what would it be like to be you? It looks like you have the life. Oh my God, if I could be rich for a day. Oh my gosh." He says, "You know what? He was a sport." And the rich person says, "Why don't we do that? In 3 months from now, I have a couple of meetings set up with people that totally don't know me. They'll never know the difference. Why don't you pretend to be me for the day? See how it feels." It's like a Hollywood script. "See how it feels." So he comes on the appointed day, 3 months later, whatever it is, and he gets to the guy's office, to his house. He says, and his clothes are ragged, ugly clothes. He says, "What are you doing? If you're going to be me, you need to..." He says, "Well, I don't know. I didn't..." All right, go into... So he gets a suit that doesn't fit him exactly because he's not exactly the same size as the rich man. And he goes to breakfast with these investors, and they're talking about revolving interests and rollovers, and he's like, "I don't know what you guys are talking about." And then they're noticing he's holding the menu upside down. He doesn't know what to order, and they just begin to make fun of him. "This is the guy to..." And they laugh. And then he's whisked away to another meeting where, again, he's made to feel like a fool. And that night, he's supposed to give a keynote address at some dinner, and he doesn't know... And at the end of the day, you know, he turns in the towel, and the rich guy says to him, "Nu, how was it?" "How was it? It was horrible. It was horrible. I hate it. What's so good about being rich? First, the second one's just making fun of you." And the rich man told him, "You're a fool. Had you just prepared, you knew you had meetings. I told you, just learn a little bit about interest rates and learn a little bit about rollovers and revolving interest. You could have had a beautiful meal at a beautiful restaurant having a nice conversation. You had a room full of people. You spoke at a dinner. You could have put homeless people and poverty agenda. You could have spoken and wowed everyone and they would have all given money. And you just squandered the opportunity because you didn't prepare." That's the simanim of Leil HaSeder, a little bit of preparation before we begin. Okay. Kadesh Uchatz. Karpas Yachatz, etc. It's interesting that the Kadesh Uchatz, out of all the simanim, it's the only one that are connected with above. Uchatz. Kadesh and wash. Kiddush and wash. The rest are Karpas, Yachatz, Magid, Rachza, Motzi, Matzah, Maror, Korech. There's no U. It doesn't say Kadesh, Uchatz, VeKarpas, VeYachatz, VeMagid, VeRachza, Motzi, Matzah. What's the significance of having that connection between Kadesh, Uchatz? That Vav connecting. So one element is a little bit what we hinted to before, that if you want real Kedusha, Uchatz, wash your hands for a meal, and there you have a real opportunity for sanctity. Not by abstaining from the physical world, but by engaging it. Right? Say a meaningful bracha, and that's real kedusha. Have a meal with Divrei Torah, and that's meaningful kedusha. That's one idea. We've spoken a little bit about it before with Chodesh Hazeh. Another idea is brought by Rav Avram Shor in his Haggadah Lekach V'Alibuv, where he says the word uchatz also means to have bitachon, to have faith, to believe. Right? For example, we say on Shabbos, you know that Aramaic paragraph, Be'an Arachitz, right? Be'alishmei, so those first words, Be'an Arachitz, Be'alishmei. You guys ever sing that in the book? So what does Be'an Arachitz mean? Be, in him, Ana, I, Rachitz. It doesn't mean I wash, it means in him I trust. Right? In God we trust, on Yudalas, it means in him I trust. Uchatz means trust. And what the Baal Haggadah is trying to teach us in a roundabout way is that when you do Maisim of Kedusha, Uchatz, you have to believe that they're impactful. You have to have faith in yourself and believe in yourself. Because sometimes when you engage in such activity, you might think, me, a finite physical being, can I really do anything of substance, anything of significance, anything of holiness, anything worthwhile? Does it really matter if I put on tefillin this morning? Does it really matter if I learn the pasuk or two? Does it really matter if I daven? And the answer is uchatz. You have to have bitachon. You have to believe that it does. Right? First of all, when you believe, it impacts the way you act in a totally different way. When you have a sense of purpose, when you have a sense of mission, you do things so much more diligently and so much more umph and gusto and gumption. You're a lot more serious about your endeavor. Right? You have a... I was just telling a group... I have a couple of chanichim from Kamu Shavad. They just entered the army 2 weeks ago. And I saw them walking the other day in their uniform. And the way they're walking now is totally different. Normally you walk in the street and you walk. But they were walking erect with their shoulders back. They were all proud. Why? Because they have a sense of purpose and a sense of mission. Even though they weren't even in their army base. They were walking away from... But they feel like everything is... They have... They believe in what they're doing. They have a sense of... And right, when you believe in what you're doing, you do it so much better. There was a... I mentioned it before, but it's a good story, so I'll mention it again. When Pete Rose was about to break the hit record, so it was clear to everyone that he was going to break it. It wasn't a question of will he, it was just when will he. Right? So he was talking to reporters, and the reporter asked him, Pete, how many more at-bats do you need? So Pete said, well, how many more hits do I need? Now, anyone that knows anything about baseball and anyone that knows anything about Pete Rose knew exactly how many more hits he needed. He was a big wild guy, and he knew exactly what he needed, but he was playing the game, playing dumb. Oh, I don't know, how many more hits do I need? The reporter tells him 27. I made up that number. I don't know that it was 27. Reporter tells us 27 hits. So 27 more hits? I need 27 at-bats. Are you crazy? You're going to get a hit every time? Nobody does that, Pete. Well, let me tell you something, Mr. Reporter, whatever his name is. If I don't think I'm going to get a hit, then I don't belong in the batter's box. Right? If you lack the confidence, then you're not going to be able to get a hit. You need to know that when you walk through those basement doors, walk in with confidence. What you're doing is impactful. All this farm right about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's the first Rashi, Bersh, right? One of the early Rashi's in the Torah. The whole world was created for Torah. Right? Without the Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to return the world back to Tohu Vavohu. I'll take it back to emptiness. I don't need the world without Torah. We are upholding the world. As crazy as it sounds to us, and as illogical as it sounds to us, but that is the reality. Trust that your Talmud Torah, that your Maase Mitzvos, is in fact what's keeping the universe going right now. It is the fuel for the universe. In Volozhin, they had 24/7 Talmud Torah. They wanted to make sure that there's always learning, because they knew that if there isn't, Chas v'Shalom, if in another part of the world, or I don't know, why take that chance? Let's make sure that there's fuel going in the world. And they had a rotation so that there was always somebody learning, including on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Motzei Yom Kippur. I think somebody just told me that I was so touched by this. In their Yisrael program, they just did Shavua Valaj, a whole week where they had a rotation of people. Shavua, maybe we should do like a Yom Valajin, like just 24-hour period where there's somebody in the basement of Shavuot. Be Kadesh Uchatz. Okay. Next idea. Wow. Alright, we're going to skip. I'm sorry, we have to skip. Anyway, we're skipping because we weren't going to do 400. The Haggadah tells us, not the Haggadah, the halacha is that we're supposed to do the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. The parameters by which we're supposed to do it is ideally Vehigadata Levincha. A father should be telling his child the story of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Why is that significant? Why should it be that way? Why not just tell my neighbor? Why not just tell myself? Why do I bedavka precisely need to tell my son, my child, this is what happened? Why is that the optimum and most ideal way of doing it? There's a sefer called Shema Natov. He was a rav in Williamsburg, young Israel of Williamsburg. And he wrote a sefer on Parsha and on Moadim, and he gave the following beautiful explanation. One of the unique aspects of slavery and slave life is that there is no family unit. If let's say you have a slave, right? That slave, let's say it's a female slave, has a child. Right? Has a child. Is the child really hers? Well, let's go back to pre-Civil War America. Slave lives in Alabama. Just had a child. And master gets a telegram from somebody in Virginia is looking to buy a young child slave. Baby slave. Right? Buy them while they're young. It's a little bit cheaper. Willing to pay $100 for a baby slave. Master says to himself, I want those $100. Okay. He takes his baby slave and he ships him down to Virginia. The mother of the child says, what are you doing? That's my child. You can't take him away. What would the master say? It's not your child. It is my slave. There is no family unit when it comes to slavery. It doesn't exist. But there's no such thing as family. Right? And it's true according to the Torah as well. The Torah law tells us that if your master gives you a wife, and then you father a child, and then you want to go free, you don't get to keep the child. The child stays with the master. Right? There is no yachas, there's no relationship between parent and child in slavery. And on this night where we're celebrating our freedom, we don't just want to tell about it, we want to demonstrate it. And one of the most clear ways of demonstrating it is by doing Vehigadeta Levincha. Look at me sitting here with my family. Beautiful, a family unit. That is the ultimate show of freedom. So I said, you know, for sure, ideally, all parents should come here for Pesach, and you should spend Pesach in Israel. But for sure, if there's ever a time to go to the United States to be with family, if you're feeling a little bit guilty about it, so at least know that on Pesach, you know, of all holidays, that's the perfect time to be with your family, because it's the best way of expressing freedom, to come together as a family, to hang out together as a family, to have fun together as a family, to be together as a family unit. That's a demonstration of freedom. That's, by the way, also the answer to another question of why it is that we have questions and answers at the Seder. Right? Everyone, man, ishta nahal. Anyone here the youngest in the family? Anyone humiliate themselves every year, even into their 30s and 40s? That's what you have to look forward to. You'll forever be humiliating yourself. Man, ishta nahal. Right? So, why is that so significant? Why put the kid through that torture? Why must it be question and answers? The Gemara says there's a Chacham question, there's a Rasha question, there's a Tam question, and even She'eino Yodeh Lishol, some people don't know how to ask, so ask for them. Why should we ask? Why does it have to be question and answers? That goes back to that same point. Slaves do not ask questions. Right? The only question a slave can ask is when you tell him to jump, he can say, how high? But you tell a slave, I want you to fill up my cup with water? No, why should I do that? What do you mean, why? There's no questions. You just do. Yours is not to ask questions. Unless you want to find yourself, you know, upon the rack beneath the lash, don't ask questions. That is a slave mentality, to not ask questions. But free people ask questions. They're inquisitive, and they try to get to the core of things. And that's why on this night we ask questions. Okay. On the Pesach night, we speak a lot about Maror. Right? We speak a lot about Maror, which is, you know, we're used to it, but the truth is it's somewhat ironic. Why are we speaking about the Maror, about the bitterness? Let's just focus on the Geula, on the freedom. Why are we speaking about the bitterness? So, right. The halacha is also that matchil begnutu mishayim b'shevach. You should start out by mentioning first the less happy parts and then go into the happier parts. Why mention that? Well, usually when you have, let's say, a championship team and you want to show the highlight films of that championship season, so you show the winnings. You don't like show the game when they lost by 28 points to another team. You show the good times. You don't focus on the bad times. Why is it that over here we focus on also the bad? Why do we focus on the Maruch Hayim? Simple pshat is, of course, that we want to just contrast. If you really want to be appreciative, so you have to say, it was so bad, and now it's so good. But it's deeper than that. It's more than that. The deeper is that sometimes the bad is also good. Sometimes the bad is also good. Right? Somebody once came to the Rabbi Yonasan Aipshitz. Rabbi Yonasan Aipshitz used to take questions between Mincha and Maariv on Shabbos. And they asked them, and they used to ask him hard questions. And one time, some balabas, a regular balabas, came to him and he says, listen, I don't have so many great questions. I don't know so much Torah, but this much I know. I like to go Shnai Mikra every week, and I like to lane. And I know that usually the note, Kadma Ve'azla, right, you know the note? It's a happy note, right? Kadma Ve'azla. And yet, it's so weird, because in the Torah, when it talks about the slavery in Mitzrayim, it says, Ve'yamareru et chayehem. They made their lives bitter. Ha ha. Sounds like, why are we singing that the life was bitter? Right? It doesn't. So everyone's beginning to laugh at this guy. What kind of a question is that? Rabbi Yonasan Apshit says that's a great question. Why are we happy about the bitterness? And he answered the following. So that we were supposed to be in Mitzrayim for 400 years. Right? We were actually in Mitzrayim for only 210 years. 190 years earlier. We were taken out 190 years earlier. So why is that? How can that be? So one of the explanations given is because the slavery was so bitter and so difficult that condensed into those 210 years was 400 years worth of slavery. That was very hard. It was very difficult, but there was certainly good in it. At least we were able to get out early. Says Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz, that's why we're singing Kadma Ve'azla. That's why we're so happy. Because you know what? Some of it was good. We were able to get out early. And says Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz, here's the kicker. If you like gematria, Kadma Ve'azla means Kodem, early, Azal means go. They went out, they walked out early. Kadma Ve'azla in gematria equals 190. 190 years early than we were supposed to go at. Says Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz. So that's why we celebrate the Maror also. Sometimes things in our life happen and we think this is the worst thing in the world. But really sometimes it's not the worst thing in the world. Sometimes it's for our good. And we just failed to recognize it at the time. When Robinson Crusoe-like island experience I mentioned to you guys before. Guy is on an island, he builds himself a log cabin, he's all alone, and he's there for a year and two, and then suddenly one night, as he didn't realize, he left his fire on, and his log cabin burns down, and he's devastated, and he says to himself, how can this be? This is horrible, this is the worst, I've worked so hard, and I'm here all alone, and I never get a break, and boom, and he's crying and he's complaining, a boat comes up to shore, and they rescue him. And he's thinking to himself, how did you guys know to find me? I've been here for so long, for 2 years, and there's never anyone that sees me. All the boats, they're like, what do you mean? We saw the fire last night. Didn't you send out those smoke signals? So what was a terrible tragedy, what he thought was a terrible tragedy, was actually his salvation. Sometimes in life, we tend to not realize that things that seem so terrible and bad are in fact for our own good. Okay. Rabbi Friend asked the question once of the following. On the Leila Seder, right, we're not yet, right, some of us say at the beginning of the Leila Seder, we say, Hashta Avde. We're still in the Golas. Baruch Hashem, we're able to come back to Eretz Yisrael, but we're still lacking the Beis HaMikdash. We're still not absolutely free. So, we know that the simple way to fix it, right, what brought about the Golas, is Sinas Chinam. The simple way to fix it is Ahavas Chinam. So why on this night where we're so desperate to celebrate our freedom, why don't we mention, oh, by the way, there's a quick fix. There's a way to make it all happen. There's a way to make it all good. All we need to do is a little bit of free love, right? Ahavas Chinam Tavita Geula. Why is there no mention of that anywhere in the Haggadah? So Rabbi Franz says that in fact, there is a hint to it in the Haggadah. And that is when we dip on the Seder night. We dip twice on the Seder night. Once we dip the Karpas, right? And later on we dip the Maror and the Charoses. We dip twice on the Seder night. Right? One dip, and this relates a little bit to partial we spoke about. One dip is the first dip, the first time we find dipping in the Torah. The first time we find dipping in the Torah is when the brothers sold Yosef. Right? They sold Yosef and then they took his coat of many colors and they dipped it in blood. Right? That was the ultimate symbol of brotherly, well, hate. Right? In that case, right? The phrase is brotherly love, but that's the ultimate symbol of brotherly hate. Right? people that should be getting along and instead they're stabbing each other in the back. Who instead of encouraging one another are speaking about one another behind their back, or even worse, maybe, you know. No, that's sinas chinam. But then we dip again the Seder. And the second time that we have dipping in the Torah is on the Seder night, right? It says that Agudat Hezov, you take a hesap, right? And you take the blood and you put it on your mashkov. It's interesting that it doesn't just say Velakach Hezov, Vetaval Hezov. It says Agudat Hezov. What is Aguda? Right? Laged means to bring together. Right? The second time we dip in the Seder is we're saying this is where we came from divisiveness, derision, split, but this is where we're going to, Agudat Ezov. We want to bring together, come together. Right? Unity. It's a lesson for ourselves now. The lesson of unity, Shlomo Kalbach used to go around concerts, I mentioned this, I think. Shlomo Kalbach used to go around in concerts, and particularly in the 60s and 70s, you know, free love, everyone was into love and peace, and he asked in concert one time, who wants world peace? And of course, everyone in the audience, we want world peace. And he said again, who wants world peace? And he said, we want world peace. So Rav Kalbach said to them, okay, if you want world peace, yeah, put your arms around each other. And they're like, what does that mean? Put my arm around the person over here? That's awkward. They're like, but he then said to them, some very smart, sometimes people think that world peace is about some people in some faraway third world country getting away. You know, I want world peace in Sri Lanka, and I want world peace in the Ukraine, and I want world peace in Chechnya, and I want world peace in Syria. Oh, but me and my neighbor? No, that's not about world peace. No, because he did that noise the other day when I was trying to take my afternoon nap. No, that's not world world peace is. And Shlomo Kalbach says, if you want world peace, it has to start from within and work its way without, right, towards out. That's the Agudat Azov. We all have to quote the Beatles, come together and make it happen. Okay, just one last idea. We'll skip all the way to the end of the Haggadah because this is the last word. At the end of the Haggadah, we have a song. Echad mi yodea, shnai mi yodea. Who knows one, who knows two, who knows three? So, it's the end of the other. What's the significance of that song? Right? Why do we sing it? So, Alakach Ve'alibuv explains the following beautiful idea. He says, you know, that it's like an exit exam. This is at the end of the Seder. If, let's say, and it's reflective of your orientation. What do I mean by that? If, let's say, on a random Wednesday morning, I come up to you and I say, hey, now what do you think of when I say the number two? So you might say, oh, number two? Derek Jeter. I love Derek Jeter, right? You might say, what do you think of when I say the number one? Number one, you know, Rangers, number one, whatever it is. Number 10, you know, whatever, 10 course meal. You might be thinking 101 different things, right? And what we want to demonstrate at the end of the Seder is that after we've gone together and we've said the story and we've acknowledged HaKadosh Baruch Hu and we've seen His hand in everything, we want to demonstrate and we want to express that our orientation is exclusively, right? You ask me one? One is Hashem. Two is Luchos. Three is Avos. Four is everything I am. I'm living a life that's suffused entirely with Kedusha, Tahara. It is all focused on my Yahadus. Seven is the days of the week, eight is the days of Mila, etc., etc., etc. I am entirely engrossed in my Jewishness and in my relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm no longer thinking about Derek Jeter, and I'm no longer, if only for 5 minutes of my life, once a year, I'm entirely engrossed with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's the exit exam to know if you've had a successful Seder night. If at the end, when somebody asks you, what are you thinking about now? And you say, one is Hashem. Okay, we should hopefully be Zocha to get to that point.